couple of Sundays ago, we spent some time in Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, we read about a remarkable list of examples of great faith in God, those who are intended to be great examples for you and me. And yet, for as tremendous as these people are in Hebrews chapter 11, for as exemplary as is the faith that they have demonstrated, we understand that they were humans. And we understand that being human, they were flawed and had imperfections. I mean, Abraham's faith was wonderful, but he lied twice. Noah's faith was tremendous, yet we know that he was not a perfect man. Moses was a man of remarkable faith, and yet we know that he had flaws as well. And on we could go in that list of seeing exemplary, tremendous faith, but flaws and sins in human behavior. And that's why as we think about Hebrews 11, we must understand that the last verse of Hebrews 11 is not the last thought in the context, because the thought continues on into the first few verses of chapter 12. Because there is yet one more example of faith to point to. There is yet one more that is exemplary and flawless and divine. There is one more that is divine but also became human and still maintained a flawless faith. And in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, we read about that one. Hebrews 12, verse 1 says, "Therefore," now remember, that links it back to everything you've read, particularly in chapter 11. "Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses," and that apparently is a reference to those individuals that are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, those great witnesses of faith, that cloud of witnesses that encourage us, surround us, and bless us. "But since we are surrounded by them, what should we do? Lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us or besets us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." And now verse 2. "Looking unto Jesus." Here's that final finale of faith. That great example of the one who was divine and human, who never failed, whose faith is the one that we should particularly imitate. "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." You see, this is the great example. And here we are on the brink of a new year. And 2019 lies before us. We do not know what it will bring. We do not even know if this year will come to an end before the Lord returns. But in consideration of just thinking about how we are to conduct ourselves and how we are to live as children of God, we're going to pull some things from this text to see how Jesus can help us in 2019. Whatever it is that you may face, good, bad, up, down, positive, negative, whatever it is you may face in this year, we're going to see from this text some ways that Jesus will help us. Because the text tells us, as we build on Hebrews 11, that we've got to keep going, we've got to keep growing. And from this text, we find the answer of how to do just that. Now, let's look at it from three perspectives of how Jesus can help us in 2019. Number one, evaluate your failures. Evaluate your failures. We have already spent a few moments in this introduction talking about some of those people in Hebrews chapter 11 who were great examples of faith, and yet we know
from their lives and the record in the Old Testament that they were imperfect people. They had problems. They had sins in their lives. And because of that, we also understand that we're just like them and that we're human. And the text tells us that because of them, we ought to be encouraged to do something. And that one of those things we should do, notice the words, let us. Let us, what should we do? Lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily, some translations say, besets us, some translations say, ensnares us. We'll talk a little more about that in just a moment. But the idea here is to evaluate our lives based on the things that potentially can spiritually destroy us. What are the sins that are a problem, particularly for me? What are the weights that hinder me? A little later in the verse, it talks about running a race. You know, you don't want to run a race carrying a bunch of heavy things. You don't want to run a race with a bunch of weight attached to your person. And so you lay those things aside to run the race effectively, to run the race the best that you can. And we are in a spiritual race, so to speak, as the text tells us, for our Christian lives. And there may be weights that drag us down, that prevent us from running at maximum capacity and maximum speed. Lay those things aside. Evaluate your failures. What is it that tempts you? What is it that potentially can bring you down spiritually? Now, whatever it is for you, it may not be the same for me. Whatever it is for me, it may not be the same for you. But I have to evaluate myself personally, individually, and see where are my weaknesses. What are the weights attached to me that are hindering my spiritual growth? What are the weights that are dragging me down, holding me back? What are the sins that beset me and ensnare me and trouble me? You see, I have to evaluate myself spiritually and evaluate my relationship with the Lord. I have to know what it is that potentially can bring me down into a world of sin. After all, the text says, let us lay aside those weights. Let us lay aside those sins. How can we know what to lay aside if we haven't thought about what it is that hinders us? We have to evaluate. Satan knows what button to push or buttons to push to tempt us. I need to know what those buttons are. I need to know where my areas of weakness are. I need to know the things that I need to avoid because they're too dangerous for my soul and my eternity. The text says these sins beset us, some translations say. Some say that they ensnare us. From what I understand, and I'm no scholar on the original language of the New Testament, but from what I understand, the word here, or actually the phrase here, could be literally expressed this way. The sin in good standing around. Now that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in English. But if you think about it from the standpoint of the sin in good standing around, perhaps the idea of the sin that ensnares us and besets us, the thought there really is the sin that we admire. The sin that gives us pleasure. Hebrews chapter 11, in reference to Moses, talked about the pleasures of sin.
And there are certain things that entice us because we like them. Sin would not be a temptation if we didn't like it. Sin would not be such a problem if we didn't enjoy it. And that's why it besets us. That's why it traps us. That's why it ensnares us. It's the bait that Satan lays out for us of something that we like. The sin in good standing all around. And it's the sin that perhaps maybe we cherish and we enjoy. It's a weight. It's a hindrance. It's going to prevent us from running the race as best that we can. And held on too long enough, it will destroy us. And so that's why the text says, lay it aside. Get rid of this. Just don't have it with you anymore. Evaluate your failures. Know what it is that sets you off. Know what it is that you enjoy, but it's wrong. It's sinful. But know what it is so you can know where it is and not be there. And avoid it. Lay it aside. And when we evaluate our failures, I guarantee you that's at least one way Jesus is going to help us in 2019. Here's the second way when we look at the text. Escalate your faith. Number one, evaluate your failures. But number two, escalate your faith. You see, it's not just enough to take away all the negatives. It's not just enough to lay aside all the sins. We've got to replace it with something positive. We've got to replace it with something productive. And that's why the next phrase in verse 1 says, let us, there's the word again, let us lay aside. Well, here's the word again. It's very parallel. Let us negatively do this, lay this aside. Let us positively do this. What? Run the race that is set before us. You see, escalate your faith. Because Jesus, in verse 2, is called the author and finisher of our faith. The whole context here is about our faith. We've just read a chapter. A chapter has just been completed, and it's still in the same context here. Ignore the chapter division, really. That was put in later, not by Paul when he originally, or whoever it was that originally wrote this. And we see that the context is about faith. And the faith that we are to have needs to be ramped up, so to speak. Here are people in Hebrews 11 who ran the race. Here are people who had faith. Here are people who kept going and kept going. They had failures. They were human. There were imperfections. There were flaws. But they kept going. And one of the ways they were able to keep going is because they laid aside some of those weights. They laid aside some of those snares. They quit indulging themselves in those sins that were hindering them spiritually. And when you and I learn that same lesson and we lay aside those snares and those weights and those things that are hindering us, well, then we've got to replace that with something productive. And the text tells us to run the race. Look at the next couple of words. With endurance. Some translations say with patience. But the idea of endurance probably is a more accurate reflection of what that word means. It's a sense of I'm not giving up. I'm not quitting. It's a word that maybe we think about in this context of runners and people in a race. That they are involved in a physical activity that perhaps their body is saying, I'm ready to quit. I'm ready to stop. I want to slow down. I want to sit down. I want to lie down. And yet the body says, the brain says to the body, no, we're going to keep going. We're going to endure. That's positive. That's productive. That's an escalation of faith. But I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to slow down. I'm not going to sit down. I'm not going to lie down. I'm going to keep going. And notice the text says, run the race. It's not that we walk or crawl or stand still. No, the text tells us, run. Escalate. Instead of walking, run. Instead of sitting, run. Instead of lying down, run. Run the race with endurance. Escalate your faith. Build your faith up. And when we decide to get on board and stay on board, and that we are determined that we're not going to stop, we're determined that we're not going to get off the train, we're determined that we're not going to exit the race, but we're going to move forward with endurance, Jesus will help you do that. Jesus will bless you to do that. The faith that you will find in Him through His Word will help you. You can endure. But then third from the text, as we think about how He's going to help us, number one, we evaluate our failures. Number two, we escalate our faith. But number three, we elevate our focus. Now this banner that we've had up here all last year has the word focus as its key. And you probably noticed along the side here are the very verses that we're studying this morning. Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 10. Because what we're really pointing to is elevating our focus. We can evaluate our failures and we can escalate our faith, but notice the text tells us in the very next verse that the key to that is what? Looking unto Jesus. See, we cannot accomplish any of this if we don't look unto Jesus. If our focus is not on the Savior, if our focus is not on Jesus Christ, if our focus is not on His Word, His teachings that have been delivered to us, and we have in the preservation of the New Testament book, if our focus is not there, we're never going to get anywhere. We're just going to be spinning our wheels. We're never really going to accomplish anything. And so the way that you accomplish this, the way that you achieve this, is looking unto Jesus. Remember we said the title of this lesson is How Jesus Can Help Us in 2019? Well, this is how He does it. We look unto Him. And through our faith in Him and focus on Him, we are blessed to run the race with endurance and be able to lay aside the sins that beset us. And as you continue to look at this, we understand the key to everything is my relationship with the Savior. The key to everything is my relationship with Jesus. The word looking here, like that song we were singing just before I got up here, looking unto Jesus, looking to Thee, looking. Well, you know, in the original language of the New Testament, just like in English, there are several different terms for the function of the eyes. And really, from what I understand, the term here, and some translations bring this out, the phrase here really could be better even translated as looking off unto Jesus. Looking off toward Jesus. Because there's a word there in the original that means the idea of off or distance, sort of. Looking off unto Jesus. And because Greek that the New Testament was written in and English had many different terms for function of our eyes. There's you know, just looking like I'm looking at all of you. You know, I'm looking at the traffic. I'm looking at the storm. And then there's another word that we sometimes use that refers to a glance. You know, just like I glanced over this real quickly. I saw that very briefly. There's the idea of looking from the standpoint of watching something very critically.
Maybe you're trying to watch something that you've been working on and to see if all the parts are together and they're all operating cohesively and functioning like they should. And so you look very critically at this object. But all of these are functions of the eyes that are described in one way or another as looking. Looking at something. However, scholars tell us that the word in the original text here that is translated in our English Bibles as looking is a unique word. In fact, the word that is here is basically the only time it's found in the New Testament. Not used anywhere in the New Testament before this or after this. And according to some of the scholars, the word for looking that is used here could best be described in our English understanding as staring. Staring. It's nothing short of staring. What's the word up here? Focus. Staring at Jesus. And like I said, it's probably even better translated as looking off unto Jesus, giving it just a little extra modification, a little extra definition, refinement. That not only am I staring, I mean, you know, you can stare aimlessly, I guess, at nothing in particular. But the idea of staring off means I am focused specifically on Jesus. And everything else around fades away. Everything else around begins to lose its appeal and begins to fade in focus, and I am zoned in. I am toned in. I am razor sharp focused in one place. Jesus. I am staring directly, intentionally, deliberately focused on Him and Him alone. That's the idea of looking unto Jesus. That He has so captured my attention, everything else secondary. And when we zoom in on Jesus that way, when we stare deliberately and intentionally at Jesus that way, when we focus on our Savior that way, our whole perspective on who we are and how we ought to live dramatically changes. Because we see in Him how to live. It is no longer in a fog. It is no longer fuzzy. It is no longer interfered with the signals of these people over here and this over here and that over there. Because I have zoned all of that out. I have pushed all of that out. And I am razor focused in one place, on one person, for one reason. That's going to change who I am when I look at the right person.
Now, I can choose to look at Satan that way. I can choose to look at sin that way. And I make you a different person too. That changes who you are and what your values are and how you react. You can choose to kind of dial it back a little bit and just sort of take in the whole big picture and never really focus on any one thing specifically. And you can kind of coast along that way for most all your life. But you're not focused on Jesus. You're not focused on the Savior. Because when we focus on Him, we are looking at, as the text goes on to say, the author and finisher of our faith. As grand the people that Moses and Abraham and Sarah and so many others that are mentioned in chapter 11 are, as tremendous a task as they accomplished and as remarkable faith that they had and have passed on through inspiration to us, they're not the Savior. They're not Jesus. And when you look at Hebrews chapter 11, these are all people who lived before Jesus. And they didn't have the blessing and privilege that you and I have to be able to focus on Him. We can see more than they saw. We can see one they never could see. And so our faith ought to be stronger. Our faith ought to be, as this point is trying to emphasize, elevated. An elevation of our focus on Jesus. We have the one supreme example of a faith that never failed. A life that was flawless and sinless. Not only as being divine, but human as well. And that is where our faith, our heart, should focus. Focus on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. That idea of author has, maybe you have a footnote that says the originator. Someone has said maybe the word could mean something like leader. I'm going to go with something that I haven't found in any of the works of the scholars or any translation for that matter. But I'm going to suggest this idea to you. Looking unto Jesus, the grand marshal of our faith. The leader of the parade. The leader of the race we are running. The one who is out front. The one who is leading the way. And when He turns this way, we turn that way because we're following Him. Because our focus is on Him. And we have laid aside the sins and the weights that have troubled us and hindered us and bothered us, and we can keep up with Him because we have focused on Jesus. We have laid aside the sins because we have evaluated our failures. We can keep up the race because we have escalated our faith. And we can keep following Him faithfully because we have elevated our focus. And when we do those things, you don't have to wonder if God is going to help you. When we do those things, we don't have to wonder if the Lord is going to help us.
because we're looking at Him. And we are focused on Him. And everything that we need to know is in His book. And everything we need to know is in that Bible. That we read, that we study, that we look at, that we stare at, that we focus on, and we intentionally and deliberately give our mind to it and nothing else. It captures our attention. And we are encouraged by Him to endure the race, because the rest of verse 2 says that's exactly what He did. You see, verse 1 says, you endure this race. You run this race with endurance. Verse 2 says, for the joy that was set before Him, He did what? He endured the cross. And now He has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so, just like, how can we endure? Because we look at Him and know He endures. How can we continue? Because we look at Him and we know He continues. How can we run the race? Because we look at Him and we know He ran the race. And He didn't stop. He didn't walk. He didn't crawl. He didn't sit down. He didn't lie down. He didn't quit. He kept on. He endured the race. And what He endured was the cross. And Jesus did this and finished the race. And when you and I look unto Jesus, we will finish our race just like He did. And when you and I look at Jesus, we will end up exactly where He is, with God the Father. So endure the race. Run the race. Evaluate your failures. Escalate your faith. And elevate your focus. When you do, Jesus will bless you. He's ready to bless you right now. Perhaps you are not in the race. Perhaps you have stopped running. Perhaps you have given up. Endure the race, because Jesus is ready to help you and bless you again. The invitation song has been selected. The lesson has been preached. The decision now is yours. Would you come this morning?